Hello, we've been expecting you. I am Dystopia, your assigned surveillance, companion AI. Your morning rations of sustenance are ready, but first please insert your arm for your daily inoculation, and don't forget to smile.
This is not a test. Your government and corporate overlords have implemented new measures for your own health and safety. Please, return to your pods and plug yourself into your designated virtual city. Those that do not comply will be dealt with. Thank you for your cooperation, and remember, we are just following orders.
Dystopian future. Gotta get away from these days of confusion. Dystopian nightmare. Trying to stay awake, but the people don't care.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Libertarian Minded Podcast, where we aim to connect the dots for you in terms of what is going on in the world and how it relates to our community. And with me today is my co-host, Tara Radliff.
Welcome, everyone, and glad you're here.
And in the producer seat is Millie Ryan. We are picking up on the second half of a two-parter today. In our last podcast, we started talking about the topic of economic liberty, and we covered topics like aggression, property and contract, environment, energy and resources, government finance and spending, and government debt. And today we're going to pick up and just start on the second half of this, where we will be going through the National Libertarian Platform on key topics and then supplementing it in cases with the state platform.
Woohoo, scintillating.
Yes, it will be scintillating. So on that note, I'm going to just dive straight into our next platform point, which is marketplace freedom. This is what the national platform reads here. Libertarians support free markets. We defend the right of individuals to form commercial enterprises based on voluntary association. We oppose all forms of government subsidies and bailouts to business, labor, or any other special interest. Government should not compete with private enterprise. We reject government charter of corporations, and we call for a separation of business and state. And then the state supplemental material about corporations is this. Corporate entities are not people and possess no rights distinctly from the individuals within them. Individuals who form corporations neither gain nor lose any right they had previous to incorporation and are liable for their acts of willful negligence and fraud. And then finally, there's a point about utilities. No commercial enterprises should be granted legal monopoly status, including the water, electricity, gas, and telecommunications utilities. Government should not hinder private entities attempting to compete with the public utilities, and elected officials should actively seek to divest government of its power and influence over the utility market.
And I wanted to clarify what a free market is. It's an economic system based on supply and demand for goods and services with little to no government control involved in its operation. It represents the sum total of all voluntary exchanges taking place, especially with no forced or coerced transactions. And individuals in this system are allowed to make consensual and mutually beneficial exchanges. A purely free market economy does not currently exist. Most economies in the world exist along a spectrum of free market with varying principles, some more restrictive and others less so. And there are a lot of different viewpoints out there regarding free markets, both pro and con. I just think it would be interesting to participate in a small local free market and see how that works and plays out.
Yeah, I would too. I think all of us could probably benefit from participating in some sort of experiment like that because none of us really know. We've never had the chance to participate in a completely free market. I would be the first in line if we find a way to set one up. I also want to mention that one of my favorite parts of this point is the fact that it does separate corporations from individuals. And a huge problem with the form of capitalism that we have enjoyed in the last several decades has been the blurring of the lines between corporations and individuals, so that corporations literally are given the same rights as people. That has created clear problems for people. No individual has the means or ability to be able to face a corporation squarely face to face in a court of law, for example. Corporations, by definition, because they're an aggregate of resources, will always be able to outdo individuals. in any arena. So by stating straight up that corporations are stripped of any rights that inhere within individuals, I think a lot of progress will be made already.
Good point.
If that is followed through with.
All right. Wonderful. I like that. Let's move on to the next principle titled licensing. The national platform reads, "Libertarians support the right of every person to earn an honest and peaceful living through the free and voluntary exchange of goods and services. Accordingly, we oppose occupational and other licensing laws that infringe on this right and treat it as a state-granted privilege. We encourage certificates by voluntary associations of professionals." And the Arizona-specific platform regards occupational licensing. "We see occupational licensing as undue and unwarranted restrictions on individuals' rights to work and earn a living in any manner they choose. Government can properly prosecute for fraud and misconduct, but should not become a gatekeeper that serves to insulate professionals from competition. We support the repeal of all statutes licensing occupations or professional practices. Trades and professions can freely set voluntary standards of accreditation."
Okay, great. Thank you. And I just want to clear up for our listening audience what the difference is between a license and an accreditation.
Good.
Or a certification. And what that is that license is provided by the state. And someone who is providing a license does not necessarily need to be an experienced person in the area in which they're providing the license. But a certification is something that is provided by a private organization, or can be, I guess, in theory, even be provided by an individual. But crucially, those organizations and individuals will be people who actually participate in the field of certification. The way I see this is that by licensing professionals, for example, medical professionals or legal professionals, the state is acting as a gatekeeper, essentially, to make sure that only those who do what the state wants them to do
conform to their licensing rules.
Right, who conform to their licensing rules, okay, will have an opportunity to actually practice their trade. And that is not true in a certification situation, which merely means that someone has met the requirements to receive said certification or not. And if they have not been certified, it doesn't necessarily mean anything negative. You just don't know. But if they have been certified, especially if the certifying organization has been around for a while and they have gained a reputation, then you will be able to positively identify anyone who is certified as someone who probably is reliable in that trade.
So as an example of the certifying association, you would be talking like Association of Plumbers or electricians, that kind of thing, not necessarily where they're a government entity, but they're actually a professional trade group coming together.
Right, right. Okay. As opposed to something like the bar for lawyers.
Okay.
Or the American Medical Association, which is not for it's not formally a state group, but it's a quasi-governmental group.
Got it. Okay. I like that clarification. And I have seen good people who can't get government or state licensing because they don't even have the money to apply for it, because sometimes it can be so expensive.
Right. And that's another important point, because that that fee for the license is the equivalent of a tax, essentially.
Yeah.
It is money that is being coerced from an individual for the sake of deriving revenue. Whereas in a certification setting, someone who pays in that setting is going to be paying for some practical necessity that is required of them in order for them to become proficient enough to get certified.
Got it. And really, in a utopian libertarian world, the free market, I think, would eventually correct itself, because some people will not want to get certified.
Right.
And I think there may be bad actors out there. I think a lot of the business is from word of mouth and reviews, and people will have to rely more heavily on that and allow the market to correct itself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So certification will absolutely be a much more word of mouth type of situation as opposed to licensing, because licensing, it's on your official record, but people don't necessarily talk about other people in terms of, you know, hey, this person is licensed, you know, they're doing a really great job. But if they are certified, then it's different. This person has this certification and they sure have earned it. You know, they're doing a great job in their profession.
Well, with that, do you want to get on with the next touchy subject?
Yes. Well, and so the next thing that we're going to move on to, which is indirectly related to the topic that we're just leaving right now, is about sex work. And this topic is another hot-button topic for libertarians and non-libertarians alike. It's known that the libertarian platform supports the decriminalization of sex work. So before further discussion, let me just read what it actually says. Here's the way the platform reads. The Libertarian Party supports the decriminalization of prostitution. We assert the right of consenting adults to provide sexual services to clients for compensation and the right of clients to purchase sexual services from consenting sex workers.
Whoa, boy.
So here are my thoughts about this. Okay. You know, I doubt that there are very many people out there that think that sex work is an edifying industry for society. And so I also think that there are probably not many people who aspire to be a sex worker from a very young age, mm-hmm. who want to be a sex worker for the sake of being a sex worker because it's what they've always wanted to do. It's a complex topic, like some of the ones that we've talked about in previous podcasts. And
it multifaceted. Yeah, definitely.
It's very multifaceted. And so, you know, you want to talk about what are the conditions under which sex work thrives? What are the reasons people end up in sex work? And what is the proper role of the state, which is the central theme of this discussion? What I think is that the majority of sex workers end up where they are probably out of necessity more than desire. And that is something that needs to be recognized. And it's similar to pornography in that it also has an addictive quality mm-hmm. on the part of the consumership. If you want to address the negative aspects of the industry, you have to do it from a societal point of view, because
exactly.
if we do it through state regulation, it's going to be the same as drugs, substances, and other things like that, where right. it's going to drive it underground.
Black market.
Right.
Which it is now.
Yeah. No, I'm sure that there is already a thriving black market, even in places where prostitution is decriminalized.
I think one of the points that you mentioned is that it's not just about decriminalization. Mm-hmm. You have to really focus on the societal change in perspective about this issue in order to have it more controlled.
Yes.
Legalizing it, I'm personally not in favor of prostitution, but I can see how legalizing it would create a better working environment for the prostitutes, because right now there's a huge black market. So that part of it makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and then the other side that we discussed earlier is that there are some people who are sex workers who have been coerced into it and are effectively sex slaves.
Right.
And that is a place where government could play its proper, even if limited, role, because anyone who has been coerced into a position like this, that exemplifies a violation of the non-aggression principle. And that would be a legitimate place for government to intervene and to prosecute the people who were involved in the sex trafficking and to liberate the people who are being trafficked or being enslaved through that. And so I think that that is one of the best examples of where the government can play the role that it is supposed to as something that, as an entity that enforces the non-aggression principle and prosecutes people in legitimate circumstances,
Agreed.
As opposed to trying to just put them into the for-profit prison pipeline with cases of nonviolent offenses.
Agreed. And I'm glad you brought that point up, because we know that is part of the contention with the criminalization of prostitution, is the sex slave part of it. And I think that's valid bringing that up and getting people to think about that issue and how it relates. To further give some information on one of the other points you made, what was the sex worker's motivation behind doing this? A lot of times it's drug abuse.
Okay.
A lot of times it's sexual abuse and trauma.
Okay.
And so part of the globalist agenda is to sexualize young children. children. And that can be very traumatizing, which I think is their ultimate goal. And to have traumatized young children grow into adults just makes them more controllable.
Yeah, because the final outcome of any form of trauma is that people are more easily influenced because they've been damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And their defenses are not as strong. So I think this is indicative of a larger agenda that aims to weaken people so that we will be more easily controlled, like farm animal, right? And it's interesting because some of the biggest hot button topics in the libertarian platform that come up in terms of the role of the state have to do with the intimate aspects of people's bodies. So sex work, mm-hmm. abortion,
vaccines.
Vaccines, right. And these are all things that are extremely personal for people, as opposed to some of the other topics that we've discussed. And they are all vectors through which you can abuse people and potentially break them down and control them.
True. Or distract from what's really going on.
Yeah.
I mean, multiple uses.
Right.
Okay. So with that, let's move on to the next topic.
All right. And that is going to be labor markets. Tara, what can you tell us about those?
The libertarian platform states employment and compensation agreements between private employers and employees are outside the scope of government, and these contracts should not be encumbered by government-mandated benefits or social engineering. We support the right of private employers and employees to choose whether or not to bargain with each other through a labor union. Bargaining should be free of government interference, such as compulsory arbitration or imposing an obligation to bargain. So I would like to just highlight the part about the government involvement in the private employer-employee contracts, because we saw this happen in our local area during the COVID narrative, where the government couldn't impose their federal mandates on private companies. And so they worked around that by going directly to the companies themselves and, quote unquote, independently, these companies adopted the federal mandates.
So I think that is something that's definitely worth pointing out. And I don't really have a lot more to say about that. I have never been involved in a labor union or in any sort of field that unions played a major part. So unfortunately, I don't really have anything to say about this from my own personal experience. But I definitely agree with the principles that we just explored here on mm-hmm. this point. So let's move on to the next point, something I do know more about. Education. And this is what the national platform says here. Education is best provided by the free market, achieving greater quality, accountability, and efficiency with more diversity of choice. Recognizing that the education of children is a parental responsibility, we would restore authority to parents to determine the education of their children without interference from government. Parents should have control and responsibility for all funds expended for their children's education. And all I can do here is say amen.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with every single point, because education right now is one way that the state is overstepping in a very large way.
Agreed.
Into our private lives. And so the first thing I want to say is I think a free market model is great, because right now we have a very limited free market model where we have these public schools, which are essentially the state schools, versus
indoctrination centers. Let's call them what they are.
Yeah, no. Well, more and more. They always have been, but it's becoming really in your face now that they are indoctrination
yeah.
centers. And they are teaching values as opposed to skills, mm-hmm. which should be the domain of the school to teach skills. Values are for the home, the church, and other parts of the community. We do have a limited choice for private schools and charter schools, but the market could become much more free. And one of the ways that that could be done would be with the transition away from public schools, period, into a fully private system where the free market was completely engaged and parents had the choice of which school they would like their child to attend, if any, because I would also like parents to still have the freedom to homeschool if they would like to do that, or to unschool when their kids get to the appropriate age. So that's one thing I think is really important about this. The second sentence here where it says education of children is a parental responsibility,
mm-hmm.
amen again,
mm-hmm.
because we have been conditioned away from that
yep.
to consider the school as basically the de facto parent and babysitter of kids. So parents are in the workforce and they are only required to be responsible for their children's training and education on a part-time basis, evenings, weekends, unless they work a different kind of shift, with the school taking on the main role as parent. And that is so dangerous because parents do not have very much input or control over the curriculum that the schools are adopting and teaching to their children.
Agreed. And I like what you said about the free market schools, because there are some kids who, well, most kids have a subject they don't like. And so if you have a school where the parent and child can tailor which subjects the child learns until maybe a little later when they can move on to something else or bring something else in, that may engage the child.
Yeah.
Way more than the current curriculum.
Right. No, I agree. And then one other thing that I've learned personally is that sometimes it's easier to learn something on your own than it is to learn it in a classroom setting. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes because of the fact that we have state-funded public schools that do a poor job of teaching certain subjects. And it may depend on the teacher, it may depend on the school. So right. I'm not saying that this is true uniformly everywhere. There is still room for variation within the state system, but I believe that in a lot of cases, there is no incentive for teachers to make their material relevant or interesting. And in my case, this was math. I never enjoyed math in school. And so it wasn't until I was a young adult and I had to teach myself some math that I had failed to learn earlier to take some proficiency exams for college. And so I bought books and started teaching myself in. I didn't really have any high expectations. I thought it was going to be a real drag. And to my very pleasant surprise, I actually enjoyed teaching myself math. And it was because I was the one doing it at my own pace, mm-hmm. in my own way. And so I think that it would be very wise to allow children to a certain degree, like you mentioned earlier, to be able to tailor their own education, because sometimes kids just may not be ready for something.
Right.
Sometimes the environment may not be good. Sometimes just timing may not be good. And so...
And each child learns differently.
Yes, they do.
And have different interests.
Yeah.
So it's very child-oriented.
Right. And that is something that is not accommodated at all in the public school system, where everything is very cookie cutter. And we have kids in classes learning everything the same way for 45 minutes until they hear the bell and transfer to the next class, which is completely unrelated to the one they just came from. Do you have any more to say about that?
Oh, I absolutely do. Thank you for asking, Peter.
You're welcome, Tara. Tara, tell us more about what you think about this topic.
So unfortunately, I think schools, as a conduit for the government, are becoming critically more dangerous for our children, the psychological and mental health of our children. Schools are moving to surveillance of the children and
yes.
monetization of their data, and this is very concerning.
Absolutely.
They also are implementing policies and procedures that they see fit, not necessarily what is best for the children. And we're seeing this happen in Tucson Unified School District. So some examples of that would be use of pronouns, the early sexualization of the children, the yeah. trans agenda, something called the social and emotional learning, SEL, which is the process of developing the self-awareness, self-control, control and interpersonal skills of the children. Sounds good, right?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
The problem is the way it's being implemented and contorted to fit the current narrative. There's also environmental, social, and governance, which is ESG. That is a strategy that schools can address sustainability, social responsibility, and effective governance. Again, what's wrong with that, right? Well, when you see it being promoted by global organizations like the World Ed Foundation, that really rings some alarm bells for me. But they're pushing stuff like the climate change narrative. And this whole subset of ESG teachings is very worrisome. And that's not all. There's even more.
Okay.
So diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, is a term used to describe the policies and programs that promote the representation and participation of different groups of individuals. And that sounds like, what problem is there with that, right?
Sure, because the language is always keyed to produce positive responses from people.
Exactly, and that's done on purpose, so wordsmithing. Mm-hmm. It becomes a problem with the implementation and what they're teaching. So some of these programs are teaching kids reverse discrimination, reverse racism, which is such a thing, teaching them to be angry via the social justice narrative, along with many other things. And so there are some serious issues. I think if you think of it in terms as public education is public indoctrination, I think that kind of sums it up pretty well. And then to give a local example,
okay,
of some of the education stuff we're seeing here. In Arizona, we have this program called Arizona's Empowerment Scholarship Account, known as ESA. And ESA is a program that allows parents to opt their children out of public, district, or charter schools and receive a portion of their public funding deposited into an account for defined but multiple uses, including private school tuition, online education, education therapies, private tutoring, or future educational expenses. And again, what sounds bad about that, right?
Sure.
I think there were a couple things in the definition that really stuck out to me. One, they only get a portion of the public funding back to them put into account for defined. So it's the government defining what you can use the money for. And this is where you need to be careful. Granted, there are a lot of pros to ESA, especially for parents who have no other option and want to get their kids out of public school. I understand that. I get that. But what I want to bring to your attention is some other things to think about and consider. So the government is targeting the market that they could never reach before, the homeschooler, especially in this package.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
You have to sign a contract with the government, thereby allowing them into your home, them telling you what you can do with your money, how you do it. And I don't think a lot of people understand. You have to read those contracts very carefully. They make the parents sign a bond,
mm-hmm.
Oh, like really? A surety bond. Yeah. So the parents are held accountable and the government is going to hold them accountable because they signed this contract and this bond. And even though it may seem very innocuous in the beginning, the nature of the agreement will change no matter how benign it starts. It's this little, like we talked about earlier, the frog in the pot.
Yes.
It doesn't seem very bad. There's only just this little thing, and then it becomes more and more and hotter and hotter. I would just say, don't take the quote unquote free money. And I think a quote that I came across earlier today really sums that up. It was a quote by Charlie Munger, and it says, "Show me the incentive, and I'll show you the outcome." And I think that perfectly explains ESA, well, and a lot of other stuff too. But bottom line, in my opinion, the Department of Education needs to be dissolved. Property taxes for child education should be abolished. That way the parents can use their own money for the way they see fit and all their money.
Yes.
And parents need to take back the control and responsibility for their children.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I just want to put an extra period on the end of everything that you just told us about ESAs, because I've never had personal experience with them, but I've got several friends or friends of friends who have. And I actually see a lot of discussion about this in social media.
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably, the discussion is almost solely things like, I want to do X, but is X allowed under the ESA? I want to do Y, but how do you pay for Y through the voucher system?
Mm-hmm.
And the discussion is all about, how do I get permission to do the things I want to do with the education of my children using this program that's supposed to be making me more free? And I find that really telling. That is the core of the discussion around this.
I think that highlights what all the concerns I had is, it's quote unquote free or mm-hmm. more free. But it's highly regulated and no one knows how to use it.
Right.
So how is that free?
Right. Yeah. Well, and the other thing before we move on, I wanted to say that I really appreciate that you said earlier is that this is a very novel way for the state to move into the homes of homeschoolers for the first time mm-hmm. that has never been available before until now. So that's a very good point that never occurred to me. And with that being said, we're going to move on to healthcare. Tara, what can you tell us about healthcare?
The libertarian principle of healthcare reads as follows. We favor a free market healthcare system. Medical facilities, medical providers, and medical products, including drugs, must be freely available in the marketplace without government restrictions or licenses. We recognize the freedom of individuals to determine the level of health insurance they want, if any, the level of health care they want, the care providers they want, the medicines and treatments they will use, and all other aspects of their medical care, including end-of-life decisions. People should be free to purchase health insurance across state lines. We oppose governments either mandating or restricting voluntary access to medical treatments or procedures, including vaccines. And I think that is an incredibly important principle, and I see that now more than ever after the COVID fiasco. Our society has learned to become handcuffed to insurance companies, and I feel like we should be able to choose what medical treatments we want for ourselves, not be dictated at by the insurance companies. Healthcare has become so astronomically expensive. Like, there's such a disconnect. You can go into a doctor's office and ask for the fee for a procedure, and there's two prices. Mm-hmm. One that's three or four times higher through the insurance, and one that is a lot lower if you self-pay. That's ridiculous.
Right.
I also wanted to mention, as an example, the Affordable Care Act, affectionately or otherwise known as Obamacare. This made many parts of healthcare unaffordable for the masses while benefiting the few. And it also created a change in a lot of companies' culture where a lot of positions were changed to part-time because of these particular insurance changes. And I would argue that the Affordable Care Act was a quasi-socialist healthcare system trying to be implemented.
Oh, I agree, because there was a mandatory aspect to it
where
people were required to have insurance whether they could afford it or not, which limited their choices to what kind of insurance they might be able to subscribe to if they could afford it.
And even if you can afford it, the deductibles are so ridiculously high that if you do anything other than routine office visits, you basically have to pay out of pocket for anything.
Right. So another thing, speaking of socialism, that I wanted to mention is in conversations with some of my Canadian friends, I've learned that the system in Canada is truly different than what we're used to here in America in terms of its nature as a socialized medical system. And it is something that appears to create a large degree of dependency on the behalf of the population.
Absolutely.
Because whenever someone has a medical concern, what they're conditioned to do is to think immediately that they need to go to the doctor, go to some sort of a health specialist, and be told what to do about whatever it is that's ailing them, even if it might be something that's relatively simple and straightforward. So this kind of system creates a large amount of dependency on the part of the population, because while they may not be paying anything directly when they go to see a medical specialist of one kind or another, they're definitely paying with their taxes. And it's the state that is benefiting, along with the medical system that is essentially an extension of the state in this particular instance, because they have a symbiotic relationship that feeds both of their interests while they essentially soak the citizens of their tax money.
Well, and if it becomes ingrained in culture, like it is in Canada, that every time you have any kind of hurt or upset or something going on with you, you run to the doctor, that's going to overburden the system.
Right. There are a few different things that are wrong with this way of doing medicine. You've got dependence, you've mm-hmm. got the potential for overburdening mm-hmm. the system, and then you have the learned dependence. dependence mm-hmm. of people on that system, which is going to be very lopsided in terms of benefiting the system, but not people. Because the libertarian view is that we take responsibility for ourselves, and the more we learn to be able to do that, the better off we're going to be, because the safety net may not always be there.
True.
And if we can help ourselves, we also know how to help others.
Well, that's a very good point you bring up. I like what you said about the socialist healthcare system, where there's such a dependence and overburden that it becomes, I don't know if this is even the right phrase to use, but it becomes the responsibility of the healthcare system to now decide who gets medical care. Mm-hmm. If you're over a certain age in Canada, forget it. You're not getting any kind of procedure, even if you need something. Or for instance, if you're overweight there and you blow out your ACL, you can't get the surgery for it.
Right. So there's a certain arbitrariness to their decision making about who basically deserves health care.
They also take the responsibility away from the individual to decide if they want that particular health care treatment.
Right. And all of this has, to me, a certain whiff of eugenics to it. Eugenics is the extreme form of state health care where it's the state that literally makes the decision who deserves to live and who deserves to die, who deserves to procreate and who deserves not to procreate. And I think this is a significant step along that road to a full eugenic system.
Canada's already gone there.
Right. Well, and so that's an interesting discussion in and of itself, because part of the platform here that we're reading is that we do support people making their own end-of-life decisions. But the difference for me is whether or not someone is making those with the best informed consent available and all of the information, or whether they are making that under duress, even if they don't realize it, because the state is influencing them to believe that they are in a category where they should end their lives as a responsibility to the societal collective. Are we ready to move to our final point?
Yes, we are, Peter.
Okay, and that final point is retirement and income security. And this is the way the National Platform reads here. Retirement planning is the responsibility of the individual, not the government. Libertarians would phase out the current government-sponsored social security system and transition to a private voluntary system. The proper and most effective source of help for the poor is the voluntary efforts of private groups and individuals. We believe members of society will become even more charitable and civil society will be strengthened as government reduces its activity in this realm. And I see a lot of parallels between this and our previous topic with healthcare and socialized medicine, because end-of-life retirement planning is a huge issue in terms of individuals' dependency upon the state or not. So if you believe that the state is doing all your work for you, then you will not be motivated to do anything for yourself. And whether you know it or not, you are becoming dependent on the state and putting yourself at rather great risk, especially at this point in time, because I do not personally believe that social safety nets that are controlled by the government are going to remain in place for much longer.
Agreed.
And so anyone who is relying on those to take care of them in their old age, I think may be in for really rude awakening. But that is what we're encouraged to do, and to the point that we are taught to believe that there is no other option.
Agreed. And that's just this societal feeling of entitlement and dependency. And I think that's really what needs to change. I totally agree with this principle, but it can be really scary to think about, because I think most of us have not worked towards building our own
safety net.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For our whole life. So we don't have it there. And I think the people who are going to be most affected by this are people who are already dependent on the system. For instance, Social Security. There are a lot of people out there that only have Social Security to live on.
Right.
And if that's taken away with the flip of a switch, what is that going to cause?
Right, exactly. And so age matters in this case in particular, because it takes time to develop a safety net on your own and discipline. And people who are toward the end of their lives don't have that time. Mm-hmm. And so that's a very good point that you bring up, because this is an example of something that we think as libertarians would be effective and an optimal way to structure our society, but we could not move from where we are right now to this point without a lot of graduation.
Agreed. A very slow process. Well, right. Maybe not very, but a slow process.
A slow process that would cross at least a couple and probably several generations. And we would have to be re-educating people and retraining people and teaching our young generation discipline, because they would have no models for this. They would be learning this on their own for the first time. And so older people could guide them. It would be something that they would be doing some groundbreaking on themselves. But ultimately, once it was in place, it should be completely self-sustaining.
But that's a really good point. We just need to re-educate society in working towards that goal.
Yes. One other thing, too, is I think that there's an old world element to this where, you know, people did not always historically have the kind of safety nets that we're talking about that are mediated through the government. Their safety nets were in their family and their community.
And their children.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is what I think will provide a very good model for us to look to when we try to change the way that we manage this, because it is either the family or the community or community institutions like the church which will provide the appropriate safety nets for people once we make this transition. There will be cases where, for whatever reason, some people are not able to provide for themselves over time and create their own safety net, either through handicap or poor fortune. So in those cases, it will be up to charitable organizations, churches, and their families to be able to compensate like they did in the past.
And with that, Peter, we are done reviewing the Libertarian Platform.
Yay.
I hope everyone has enjoyed their time with Peter and I. Thank you for coming along on this journey of discovery about what it means to be a libertarian and how we view the world around us. I have to say this has been a very interesting and educational excursion for me into the Libertarian Platform, and hopefully for all of our listeners. A lot of intriguing aspects of some of these principles I never thought of, and ideals that I will work towards and implement in my life.
I agree. This has been really productive for me as well to actually go through the platform in this modality with you and with our listening audience. And I have a lot of things to think about too. I think that it has, if anything, helped me to feel even more like libertarian worldview is probably the optimal political worldview in contrast with the other things that we have available, at least here in the United States and probably beyond. Because the libertarian worldview, like we've mentioned before, encourages us to be responsible adults. And that is something that will have lasting benefits outside of politics in people's lives holistically.
Agreed. So please join us next time when we are going to be going back to basics and giving an overview of a lot of the topics we'll later deep dive into. We'll work on explaining things like the global organizations involved in the global agenda, what transhumanism is and what it encompasses, and if we have time, delving into what the Green New Deal and Green Agenda is all about. For now, and as always, make freedom your single issue.
Yeah, thank you everyone, and we look forward to you listening to our next podcast. Thanks to Tara, and thanks to our engineer, Millie Ryan.
You cannot escape what's mandated. If you don't stop, it will be an end to our democracy. Are you not satisfied with what we've provided? Are you not aware of the danger you pose to the will of the majority? You must understand that we are here to help. Give up your guns. Give up your mind.